Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinatha Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Kiri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharne Vivisesa Srinivari Vaskachade Satarne. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapadakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavam Cha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ranatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Stam Manchakapa Jupaschakti Pasandhya Vatapitam Pavanaya Vaishnavi Mona Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So August 24th, 2018, Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 6, Conversation between Narada and Vyasadeva, Text 16. Jayatas charanam bojam Bhavanir jitta chetasa Utkantya shruka lakshasya sasya Ridyashin me shanayar harihi Jayataha
Thus meditating upon
Charana Ambojam, the lotus feet of the localized personality of Godhead. Bhava Nirjita, mind transformed in transcendental love for the Lord. Chetasa,
all
mental activities,
thinking, feeling, and willing.
Utkantya, eagerness, Ashrukala, tears roll down, Akshasya, of the eyes, Riddhi, within my heart, Asit, appeared, May, my, Shanai, without delay, Harihi, the personality of Godhead. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is Narada Muni speaking. As soon as I began to meditate upon the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, with my mind transformed in transcendental love, tears rolled down my eyes, and without delay, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, appeared on the lotus of my heart. Purport. The word bhava is significant here. This bhava stage is attained after one has transcendental affection for the Lord. The first initial stage is called Shraddha, or a liking for the Supreme Lord. Did anybody find that interesting? What did Prabhupada just say there? Someone who doesn't have a book.
Shraddha is the first stage of liking for the
Lord. Yeah, what did you think that Shraddha was? And Prabhupada calling it here? Liking. And in order to increase that liking, one has to associate with pure devotees of the Lord. So, what stage is he talking about there? The third stage is to practice the prescribed rules and regulations of devotional service. That is, this will dissipate all sorts of misgivings and remove all personal deficiencies that hamper progress in devotional service. That is, when all misgivings and personal deficiencies are removed, there is a standard faith in transcendental matter. And the taste for it increases in greater proportion. This stage leads to attraction. And after this, there is bhava, or the prior stage of unalloyed love for God. All the above different stages are but different stages of development of transcendental love, which is? Now let's read this again. All the above different stages are but different stages of development of transcendental love. In other words, they're all degrees of transcendental love. Being so surcharged with transcendental love, there comes a strong feeling of separation, which leads to 8 different kinds of ecstasies. Tears from the eyes of a devotee is an automatic reaction. In other words, it's not something practiced like an actor. No. An actor can train themselves to cry. So it's an automatic reaction. And because Sri Narada Muni in his previous birth attained that stage very quickly after his departure from home, it was quite possible for him to perceive the actual presence of the Lord, which he tangibly experienced by his developed spiritual senses without material taint. Jaya tas charanam bojam bhava nirjita tetasa otkan tas yastru kal lakshyasya ridyasin me shanayo harihi. As soon as I began to meditate upon the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, with my mind transformed in transcendental love, tears rolled down my eyes, and without delay the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, appeared on the lotus of my heart. So this verse is about a transition from one particular stage of bhakti to the other, and Srila Prabhupada gives in his purport, without using the Sanskrit terms, he's giving an explanation of the stages of bhakti as Rupa Goswami gives from Shraddha to Prema. So why do you think it's important to have some idea of the stages of bhakti? Yeah.
So we know where we're at and where we're supposed to go.
We know where we're at and where we're supposed to go. It's kind of like having a GPS, right? You know where you are and where you're supposed to go. You know, like I take a walk most mornings, and I'm changing location all the time. So whenever I take a walk, I notice the landmarks, right? So I can find my way back. And that way, when I'm coming back, then I notice, okay, there's this hedge over here, there's this sign, there's this road. That means I'm going back, right? If you don't know the landmarks, you may make a wrong turn. So like one time, she'll probably listen to this class. She's probably either listening to it live or she'll listen to it on a recording. So I hope you don't mind. So one time I wanted to travel from Simachalam to Radhadesh. I was going to be in Simachalam for Nisinga Chaturdasi, but I had to be in Radhadesh to teach at the college. So I put up a notice on social media, is anybody going to be driving from Simachalam to Radhadesh after the festival? So this friend of mine wrote me, I'm going to be driving. And I said, no, you're not. You're going to be in Spain. You're not even going to be in Germany. I said, you'd be coming there just to drive me, and that's ridiculous. She says, no, I'm going to come anyway. Which she wouldn't have come anyway, but anyway. She said, I'm going to come anyway, whether you accept my ride or not. So I finally said, okay. You can drive me. So she ended up being delayed. She got there after the whole festival. She got there 10 minutes before I was going to give up and buy a train ticket. And the next morning, we get in the car, and we're going to Radhadesh. And we're driving for a while, and she says, by the way, I don't have any maps. Oh. Why don't you use a GPS? GPS? What's a GPS? We didn't even have... Neither of us even had the address of Radhadesh. It was that bad. And when we're, we laughed a lot on the way. She and I, we definitely spent a lot of time laughing. But, you know, on the way, we kept having to buy maps at different petrol stations. But there would be maps just for that local area. You know, so we'd have to buy another one and another one and another one. And because neither of us had the address of Radhadesh, we couldn't, when we got to the end, we didn't know where we were going. We almost ended up in Luxembourg. And I had, that was my first, I That was the first mobile phone that I had. At that time, it was an old, used thing. The GPS had never worked on it. And somehow or other, by Krishna's divine intervention, I used it to try to find the address. And when I found the address, the GPS automatically kicked in for the first time ever since I had owned the phone for a year. And Krishna brought us to Radhadesh. But, you know, how do you go someplace if you don't know where you are and where you're going? She'd never driven that route before. I hadn't driven that route before. We had no idea what the landmarks were. We didn't know anything. You know, it was a miracle that we got there at all. So, and attaining to Krishna Prema also, you know, you want to have a map. You want to have a GPS. You want to have some guidance to know where you are and where you're going. Now, it's not that you need to look at it constantly. Right? Generally, we should be absorbed in our service from moment to moment without so much about worrying about, you know, where am I? Where am I going? It's not that that should be our constant absorption. Because after all, we're under the guidance of teachers. We're under the guidance of the Lord. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam didami buddhiyogam tam yenamam upayantite. We have our spiritual master. Maybe many spiritual masters who are helping us. We have so many devotees who are helping us. And often they can have some idea of where we are and what we need. So it's not that, you know, a student in school doesn't have to be constantly worrying, where am I exactly, where am I going? They have so many superiors who are taking care of them. But we should also have some idea. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this instruction over and over and over again. Throughout Prabhupada's purports, I mean, if you didn't know about Shraddhata Prema, that particular progressor, when you read this purport, you wouldn't identify it, right? Isn't that correct? But once you know about it, it's all over the place. Now, I've identified 21 different ways, I'm sure there's more, of identifying the progression from the beginning of bhakti to prema. Shraddhata Prema is just one of them. The Shraddhata Prema model is perhaps one of the more holistic of the models. It's looking at a lot of different factors. Can you think of any other model of how we get from beginning material life to Krishna Prema besides the Shraddhata Prema model?
Yoga ladder.
The yoga ladder. Okay. Very nice. So there's V-karma, right? Then there's karma. Then there's karma yoga, then gyan yoga, then dhyan yoga, and then bhakti yoga. Of course, you can go to bhakti yoga directly from any of those. You can go to bhakti yoga from vikarma even. What's another one?
Panchakosha.
Huh?
Panchakosha.
Can you explain that?
You know the anamaya.
Oh! Wow. I don't even know if I have that on my list. I'll have to add that to my list. I should know that because I studied Ayurveda ages ago. So there's Anamoya, Pranamoya, Manamoya, Gyanamoya, Vijnanamoya, and Anandamoya. Prabhupada only talks about that twice. Once in a purport, once in a lecture. Very nice. That's a very different way of looking at things than Shraddhata Prema, isn't it? What are some others?
Kanista,
Majjhima, and Uttama. Now, Kanista means a beginner, Majjhima literally means the middle, and Uttama means the highest, above ignorance. So how many different, by the way, how many different explanations of beginning, middle, and advanced are there? And they're all different from each other.
Sorry, what was the question?
So Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttama just mean beginner, intermediate, and advanced. That's all they mean. They don't refer... You could be a Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttama guitar player. They don't refer in and of themselves to a particular stage of bhakti. And in various places, we have descriptions of a beginner, intermediate, advanced in bhakti, but in different areas of bhakti. Where is there some description of Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttama? And the nectar of instruction, yes, from Srila Rupa Goswami. And what does he give there? He gives that the beginner is one who is doing what?
Seeking God in the deity. We see God, we see Krishna in the deity.
That's 11th canto. In the nectar of instruction, yes.
No faith.
That's nectar devotion. Worshipping the deity has diksha, and is worshipping the deity is which? Kanista, Majjhima, or Uttama? Nope.
Majjhima.
And what's the Kanista in that system? I should write this on the board. Yes, chanting. So the beginner is one who's chanting the holy name, maybe has Harinam initiation. The middle one is the person who has diksha, is worshipping the deity. And the Uttama is one who is...
just by seeing people feel like chanting.
Different one. And I'm not sure where that one is. I'd have to find it. Another one that wasn't previously on my list. Wow, this is so exciting. The Uttama given by Rupa Goswami in the Upadesha Amrita, the Uttama is? Gives two qualities. He has no propensity, he or she has no propensity to criticize, no desire to criticize anyone. And he has undeviating devotional service. So we have the beginner chants Hare Krishna, the intermediate, the intermediate has diksha and is worshipping the deity, and the Uttama is undeviating in bhakti. So that's beginning, intermediate, and advanced in terms of what? A person's what?
Devotion.
It's all about devotion. But what aspect of devotion? Someone who's just chanting Hare Krishna, someone who's taking diksha is worshipping the deity, and someone who says bhakti 24/7.
Commitment.
That's about Kanista, Majjhima, Uttama in terms of commitment to the process. Okay? Now somebody mentioned nectar devotion. Who mentioned nectar devotion?
You.
Well, but somebody mentioned the process of nectar devotion. Who was that? Somebody? Well, someone on this side of the room. I was talking about faith. So there Rupa Goswami is talking about beginning, intermediate, advanced in terms of the qualification for taking up Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, which is very different from beginning, intermediate, and advanced in bhakti itself. He's talking about who is qualified to take up Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, which has to do with following Vidhi, which comes from the Shastra. Everybody follow this? This is a practice of bhakti based on shastra. So who would have the most faith to follow a system of bhakti that comes from shastra? Who would have the most? Who would be the uttama in that system? If you're going to have to follow something, you have to follow a guidebook. What would make you the most qualified to follow that guidebook? This is a really simple answer. If you... If you have faith in the guidebook, and if you know the guidebook, if you have faith in, you know, what makes you the most qualified to follow a cookbook? If you can read the cookbook, you're familiar with the cookbook, and you have faith that it's a good cookbook, right? It's actually just logic. And what would have you be the least qualified would be if you don't have much faith in the cookbook. If someone comes along and says, oh, you know, they're not such a good cook. Oh, okay, I won't do it. So that's a Kanista, Majjhima, Uttama. The Kanista has very shaky faith. Someone can come along and say, well, in this Purana it says Shiva is supreme, and they say, oh, okay, I don't know if I want to do bhakti for Krishna anymore. So their own faith is shaky, and they can't convince others. Then the person with medium qualification, they have firm faith, but they can't convince others, at least not all the time. And those who are really qualified to take up Vaidhi Sadhana, they have firm faith in the Shastra, and they really know it, and they can convince others. So that's very different from Rupa Goswami's description in the Upadesha Amrita about degrees of commitment to the process, isn't it? So looking at very different things. And then someone over here talked about from the 11th canto, right? Was that you? Okay. So what's the Kanista, and this is one Prabhupada quotes all over the place. Who's the Kanista devotee according to the 11th canto?
He only sees Krishna in the deity and not in the devotees.
Only sees Krishna in the deity and not in the devotees. So the vast majority of religious people on the planet are in this category. God is in my temple, mosque, you know, church, synagogue, and that's the only place he is. When I go home, he's not there. When I'm at work, he's not there. You know, religion is for Sunday at 11 in the morning, and there's no religion at Monday at 2 in the afternoon. That's, you know, that's something else. I, my religion, my family, my work, my hobbies, my entertainment, they're not holistic. Also, God is only in the temple means God's only in my temple. He's not in your temple. God's only in a Sunni Muslim mosque. He's not in a Shiite Muslim mosque. He's not in a Catholic church. He's only in a Protestant church. He's only in the Protestant church from the Lutherans who have the creed from 1683, and not in the Lutheran church from the Protestants who have the creed from 1792. Right? God's only in my temple, my particular way of worship, and I can't recognize who's a devotee and who's not a devotee. You know, on the lowest level, they actually kill each other, right? The Protestants and the Catholics and the Sunnis and the Shiites and the Muslims and the Jews and the Muslims and the Christians and the Muslims and the Hindus and the Catholics and the Protestants. You know, before we had the Muslim terrorists, we used to have Catholic terrorists. Right? You know that, right? Well, even, you know, the Spanish Catholics went to the Western Hemisphere and tortured anybody who wouldn't convert. You know that, right? You all remember that in history books? And many times they tortured them until they converted, and then they killed them. And there was the Spanish Inquisition where they were, the Catholics were torturing the Protestants and the Jews and the Muslims if they wouldn't convert. So this is a very low level of Kanista Adhikari. That's like the very, very bottom level. You know, there's only my God. Anyone who doesn't follow my God is going to hell, and I have to cut off their head, and so forth. And then there's the... And actually, these the Kanista Adhikaris, according to that system, are also called Prakriti Bhaktas, materialistic devotees. And it's explained, I think by Bhakti Vinod, that really, they're not really devotees at all. They're really materialist. But we call them Prakriti Bhaktas because advanced devotees are only supposed to associate with devotees. They're not supposed to associate with materialistic people. And so you call these beginning spiritualists Prakriti Bhaktas, so the advanced devotees will say, oh, they're Bhaktas, I can associate with them. And that way they have a chance for elevation. So what's the middle in the 11th canto system? Yes, so see, to distinguish between God, the devotees, the innocent, and the envious. To have love for God, to make friendship with the devotees, to help the innocent, and to avoid the envious. And what's the top in that system in the 11th canto?
See, everyone is a part and parcel of Krishna.
Everyone's a part and parcel of Krishna, sees Krishna everywhere, in everyone, and in everything. So that's about beginning, intermediate, and advanced in terms of what?
Discrimination.
About? Relationships. That's about beginning, intermediate, and advanced in terms of relationships. And then another system, and I don't know, I taught this book a couple of years ago, but we published Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashiksha, which is another, the whole Manashiksha is a guide. Now, Manashiksha is a guide that starts at Majjhima, for a Majjhima Bhakta. It really starts for someone who's like at an Artanavritti or Nishta, and goes up to prema. It doesn't start at the beginning. But in Manashiksha, in verse 1, Raghunath Das Goswami says that one should have love for the devotees, and then in that commentary, Bhakti Vinod talks about, again, Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttama. Does anybody have any idea in that commentary what Bhakti Vinod talks about as far as Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttama? So I taught this 2 years ago. Was I a terrible teacher? All right, so there he says, the Kanista are the devotees who always live in Vraja, at least mentally. Their absorption is Vrajendra Kumar. Then the Majjhima devotees are those of any genuine spiritual tradition who are absorbed in God, but not necessarily living in Vraja in their mind. And the Kanistas are Brahmanas who live and teach Varnashram. So any idea what that is, beginning, intermediate, and advanced in terms of? Do you understand God through Varnashram, through ordinary morals and ethics and proper behavior? Do you understand God not necessarily as Vrajendra Nandana, or understand God in Vraja? So what's that intermediate, beginning, intermediate, and advanced in terms of?
Process of Varnashram would be Kanishas.
Yeah. But what's the overriding idea? How you understand God? Your conception of God. Do you understand God as just kind of the creator of the world and the creator of a system of piety and good works? Do you understand God as transcendent but not necessarily in Vrindavan? Do you understand God as being in Vrindavan?
It's based on your relationship with God.
It's based on your relationship with God, yes. The one in the 11th canto is based on your relationship with God and the devotees. But this is based on your relationship with God in terms of how you understand the personality of God. Now, do you understand that you could be advanced in one system and not advanced in another? Let's say you're worshipping Krishna in Vrindavan, but you have very little knowledge and faith in the scriptures. Is that possible? Could you be worshipping Krishna in Vrindavan and think that God's only in the temple and not know how to respect the devotees? You ever met anybody like that? No? I have. Could you know how to deal with four classes of people and just think that God has to do with being pious in the world? Are there people like that? Sure, there are people like that. You could think that the ultimate spirituality is just about Varnashram. You have people in Amrita like that. But yet you're aiming for Krishna in Vrindavan. You could think the ultimate is Varnashram, and you could have full faith and knowledge in the Shastras, couldn't you? Right? So just because you're advanced in one aspect of bhakti doesn't necessarily mean that you're advanced in all. Even Shraddha to Prema. It's not necessarily that somebody is fully in Nishta. In Madhurya Kadambini, Vishnu Chakravarti Sakur says you can be fixed in body, mind, and words. He said generally it's first body, then words, then mind. But sometimes it can be first mind. There might be somebody walking around here whose mind is fixed on Krishna, but they're not so together externally with their activities of bhakti. And there might be somebody who's totally, totally fixed in their external activities of bhakti, but they're thinking about, you know, politics or something. So it doesn't all happen at the same time. And a person may have a great taste, they may have some ruchi for hearing the Bhagavatam, you know, but they may not be that fixed in Bhajana Kriya. Isn't that a fact? Right? So I'm going to ask these questions a lot. So I would assume that of everybody here, there's something in bhakti that's extremely easy for you to do. In fact, it's so easy, you probably have lost awareness that you're even doing it. Like, I'm sure for many of us here, if not most of us here, eating vegetarian food is very easy. And offering our vegetarian food to Krishna is very easy. We no longer think of it as some austerity. We don't think of it as, oh, this is something that I have to work at. Now, for some people, if you live outside and husband and wife work and you have no time to cook, that may be something difficult. But for many of us, eating Krishna prasadam is just extremely easy. Or not gambling. We probably don't even wake up in the morning and think, oh my God, I have to not gamble today. You know, for some people it's really a big issue. I mean, I know second initiated devotees who really struggle with that. But for many people, it's nothing. Or, you know, not smoking. You're not even aware that you're doing it. So who here has something in the practice of bhakti that is just extremely easy, never been a struggle, did it immediately, and keep doing it without even thinking about it? How many of you have something in bhakti like that? Some of you have nothing that's easy at all. Oh my goodness. Or else you're really shy. All right, then there's some things that we do them consistently. But we have to do them intentionally. We have to think about them. We have to say, okay, yeah, I got to do this thing. I got to make sure that I do it. So it's an effort. It's a little bit of an endeavor, but we do it. It's a minor struggle. So how many of you have something in bhakti that's like that? Okay, then we have some things that we've been struggling probably for years, you know, weeks or months or years, and it's just, when am I ever going to be able to do this? Maybe sometimes we're a little successful, but, you know, we fall back down, and we're like, oh my goodness, you know, I criticize the devotee again, I can't believe it. You know, whatever it is. So how many of you have something in bhakti that's just been this struggle? All right, now, I'll be pretty certain, and I'm definitely not going to do this, but I'm pretty certain that if I had everybody write down what was their easy thing, as easy as breathing, what was the thing that they did but they have to make some endeavor, and what's the thing that's a struggle, and we compared them, they would be different. So what's easy as breathing for one person may be middling difficult for another and a big struggle for another. Which makes it very difficult sometimes for us to ascertain where we are in bhakti. Because if we just look at the thing that's easy, we'll think, oh, look at that. And if we just look at the thing that's really a struggle, we think, oh, just look at that. And we're supposed to ascertain to some extent other people's position, not so we can judge them, by the way. Not so we can say, I am better than you. Or, oh, you're so much higher than me. Oh, great Vaishnava. Not either of those, please. They're both rather obnoxious. But so we can choose with whom and how to associate. We have to be able to ascertain something about someone else's position so we can choose how to deal with them. And we have to know something of our position so we know the next step. But we should be very careful because somebody may be much higher than us in some area, and we may be much higher than them in another area. At a certain point, all of us come to perfection in everything. But as we're going through the path, different people will progress at different speeds in different things, which depends on our previous life, depends on our conditioning in this life, and so many things. So whenever we read or hear about these stages, we should keep in mind that although these are general stages, first of all, they don't all correlate with each other. You can't correlate, you know, this Uttama, Majjhima, Kanista with this Shraddha Prema, and there's many more we didn't mention, like offensive chanting, clearing stage, pure chanting. As I said, I identified 21. They don't all exactly correlate with each other, nor are we in a particular box. Nor is someone else in a particular box. We're people. Now, one other progression of bhakti I'd like to talk about, because it's very, very related, although Prabhupada doesn't talk about it in this purport, it's very related to this experience Narada is having. And I've always been fascinated by this particular explanation of the process of bhakti, but when we were producing Manashiksha, it's in the 11th verse. So Raghunathas Goswami in the 11th verse talks about how we should meditate, and here you have the word jaya, to meditate. And Prabhupada has, Bhaktivinoda in his commentary to Manashiksha on the 11th verse, talks about the stages of bhakti in terms of stages of meditation on Krishna. Where does Srila Prabhupada talk about the stages of meditation on Krishna? Quoting Bhaktisiddhanta, yes. It is a nectar of instruction, but not there. It's actually in the turning point verse of nectar of instruction, which is text 8. So, but yes, it's a nectar of instruction. And there Prabhupada's quoting Bhaktisiddhanta. So Bhaktivinoda also explains this in, as I say, his commentary to the 11th verse of Manashiksha, also in his Harinam Chintamani, also in Jayavadharma, and Jiva Goswami also explains it. So I'd like to just give you a real summary. I have a, you know, seminar where I spend an hour on this, but we could spend several hours on each of these explanations, yeah? This is an overview class. This is an overview of these different systems. So I'm just going to go through a brief overview, but again, we could go into this in quite a bit in depth. So there's different ways of explaining also the stages of meditation. They're not always explained exactly the same way. In Shivaram Swami's book, Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani, he tries to bring them all together into one place. But again, that's a little hard because they don't all perfectly correlate with each other. So I'm just going to go through a brief explanation of Prabhupada's explanation, which he took from Bhaktisiddhanta, that's in the Nectar of Instruction, text 8, purport. So there he gives five stages of meditation, with the middle one having five parts. So five stages, the middle one having five parts. So the first stage of meditation is hearing. You can't meditate on Krishna if you don't know anything about him. And many times Prabhupada would define religion as that which helps you to know God and to love him. Without knowing him, how are you going to love him? So first stage is hearing, and it should be hearing. This is hearing as a stage of meditation. So how should one be hearing meditatively? Right? Sachinandan Maharaj likes to quote how there are stages given in the Vedas for study. Hearing, reflecting, applying, praying about. So hearing in a meditative way. Not just reading, okay, I read my verse for the day. But really reflecting on what you've heard. Trying to apply what you've heard. Trying to make it part of you. Now remember, in this purport of today's verse, Prabhupada is talking about everything as degrees of what? Liking, right? The first initial stage is called shraddha, or liking for the Supreme Lord. So degrees of liking. So in the stages of meditation, it's hearing in order to like Krishna. It's not hearing in order to pass a computerized test, you know, multiple choice exam, or to be able to impress somebody with your trivia knowledge. You know, it's not so we could have a trivia competition. But it's hearing in order to like. Then the next stage of meditation is acceptance. So in this stage of meditation, one really starts to imbibe and internalize what one has heard. And one's liking for Krishna has increased, so that the hearing is really becoming part of oneself. Then the third stage is called smaranam, which is interesting because the whole thing is about smaranam. But the third stage is particularly called smaranam. So where one is now really actively meditating on the Lord. Now we should say these first three stages are all within the platform of the mind, which is very nicely explained in Lord Kapila Dev's instruction 328.34. Where Lord Kapila Dev explains, and this is exactly what's in today's verse, that the mind is used as a hook to attract the Lord as you would attract a fish to a hook. And Prabhupada, in his commentary on that verse, talks about mechanical yoga and living yoga. So on the platform of the mind, it's all more or less mechanical. And we see Narada Muni starting off here in dhyana. He's meditating on Charana Ambojam. He's meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord. Deliberately, he's sitting down. I am going to meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. Is that clear to everybody? And he's using his mind. But he has developed liking. He has developed liking. He's not meditating on the Lord because, okay, if I meditate on the Lord, I'm going to get mystic powers, or I'm going to merge into the Brahman, or I'm going to become peaceful, or I'm going to become ethical. He's meditating on the Lord because he likes to. Because he likes the Lord. Just like we like people. Everyone here likes somebody. I hope there's somebody in the world that you like. But you still might deliberately plan to write them. Oh, I'm going to write a message, a letter, a text message to this person I like just to say hello. Does everybody do that? You make a deliberate attempt. Or you might even think, oh my goodness, you know, I haven't said hello to whatever. I'm going to write them. I'm going to think about them. It's intentional. So that's on the platform of the mind. Here there are five stages. One is interrupted. Your meditation on the Lord, you think of Him, then you forget about Him, you think about Him, you forget about Him. The meditation isn't systematic. Next is uninterrupted. The mind's really good at that. We think of one thing, leads us to something else, leads us to something else, leads us to something else. But with Krishna. Next one, it gets concentrated. The uninterrupted meditation becomes thick. Like the difference between listening to class while you're making a garland and just listening to class. Then that concentrated meditation starts to spread. So it becomes uninterrupted and concentrated. Then full total absorption or mental samadhi. Now, what happens between this stage of full mental samadhi and this next stage is exactly what's described in today's verse. The fourth stage is samadhi on the spiritual platform where Krishna appears in the heart Himself. Which is a difference between thinking about your friend and having your friend knock on your door and come to your room. Oh, I was just thinking about you. You're thinking about someone and they call you on the phone. Has this ever happened to you? Oh, I was just thinking about you. We're thinking about Krishna and He shows up. Do we do this? Do we come visit people and call people who think about us? Yes? Don't we do that? Yeah? Don't we like to visit people who think about us? I don't usually visit people who don't think about me. Why bother? If people like me and they think about me, if someone says, "Oh, well, I've been thinking about you. When are you going to come?" Oh, I should go there. I have these devotees in Brisbane. They've been writing me, "When are you coming back to Brisbane?" And I just saw their daughter in Crowley. So my parents want to know, "When are you coming to Brisbane?" So then I'm thinking, I got to go there. Doesn't this happen to everybody? Well, guess what? It also happens to God. In the fight between Krishna and Jambavan, I was just reading, where Prabhupada says that Krishna has all the instincts of a human being. So this fourth stage of meditation is not with the mind. The fourth stage of meditation is Krishna says, "Oh, you're thinking of me with affection? You want to see me? Here I am." Now then He appears in the heart. Fifth stage of meditation, He appears in front of you face to face. So what we're going through here in this verse is going from third stage, part five, to fourth stage. Narada Muni is absorbed using his mind in meditation with affection, with attachment, with liking. And as soon as he does that, Krishna comes. It's like you call your friend and they answer the phone. Immediately on the first ring, it shows up, caller ID. "Oh, I know that person. I want to answer the phone." So this is another way of understanding the stages of bhakti. What is the degree and kind of our meditation on the Lord? So we can refer to any of these systems to understand, where am I in bhakti? What do I need to do to advance? Again, this is not something we should be thinking about 24/7. Just 24/7, we should be thinking about, what service do I have to do? How beautiful Krishna is. Look, He's wearing white and pink clothes today because it's Friday. And there's flowers there, and there's a little green border. And He's playing His flute so nicely, and that turban looks so heavy. I can't imagine Him walking around Vrindavan wearing that on His head. I wonder if He takes some of the flowers off and throws it to the cowherd boys. And that's the kind of thing we should be thinking about 24/7. But it's good every once in a while to check the GPS and check the map. Where am I? Am I going too slowly? Bhaktivinoda and Bhaktiloka in the Imagraha section said, "Don't go too slowly, don't go too quickly." Am I going too slowly? But have I been stuck in Anista Bhajana Kriya for 48 years, 48 lifetimes? Have I been at Adushraddha for 10 million births? You know, not going so slowly. Oh yeah, I've been in ISKCON now for, 90,000 years and still haven't taken initiation. And not going too quickly. Oh, I must be a pure devotee right now. So, not jumping ahead, but not falling behind either. On the highway, there's a maximum speed, there's a minimum speed. And being able to be alert for where the signposts are. What's the signpost here? Because Prabhupada says to advance in bhakti, you don't need a certificate from others. And you should be able to tell yourself whether you're making advancement. Now, I was so excited about in Manushiksha that, I don't know if any of you already saw, but I put together a novel, which I have a few copies left, of the same thing. How do you go from materialism to prema? But I put it in the form of a fictional story. So anybody can read that. Okay, how do I attain to the perfection of life? Same kind of thing. How do we progress? So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements, corrections. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Mataji, for a nice class. I was wondering about a point you made that sometimes different devotees may be advanced in different aspects of devotion.
Generally, not just sometimes, generally.
And you mentioned, you gave an example, someone might be thinking of Krishna, maybe Zoli, Krishna, and Vrindavan, but they may not be fixed up in that external practice of devotion.
That's what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says in Madhurya Kadambini.
I was wondering if you could just maybe elaborate on how that is possible, because normally we think the mind is the last.
Well, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says generally the mind is the last. But it just isn't true always. I mean, one example that I can give is of children born into Krishna consciousness. So, you know, I've spent the majority of my time in ISKCON working with the children of the movement. And many of them are really absorbed in Krishna, but they're not following all the principles of Vajra Kriya. And many of them are really, I mean, I don't know, now things are starting to change in our movement, and perhaps that's not quite so true anymore for many of them. But at least in the past, when we had, you know, children were going to devotee schools, and Mangalartik was one third of the devotees in Mangalartik were children. That was not uncommon. I mean, I remember I was taking prasadam once, where I was the only one taking prasadam who hadn't been born into Krishna consciousness, and everyone there, they were second and third generation, they were talking about Krishna as if he lived next door, as if he was a member of their family or their village. It was just extraordinary, and I thought, wow, you know, for those of us who come as adults, it takes 20 or 30 years before Krishna is not just some abstract philosophical concept.
Is that due to an extraordinary amount of advancement, like the Kambasis maybe?
Perhaps. I mean, I'm just thinking about, you know, one time the Gurukul kids were playing hide and seek in our house after school. And there was also one young child there, 3 years old. And she ran up to the deities and she said, Gaunitai, where's Mukunda hiding? You know, Prabhupada said that the children should play games as if Krishna was right there. They should go, like, play in the park and say, okay, come on, Krishna, come on, Balaram. Maybe we're going to find some demons to kill today. And Prabhupada said the children should play like that. And children who are actually playing like that and who don't have Barbie dolls and Superman comics and, you know, they are absorbed in Krishna and Vrindavan. But they're not chanting 16 rounds when they're 3 years old. And they're still children. It's just like, you know, the monkeys in Ram's army, when they came back from finding Sita, they trashed the garden, Sugriva's garden and orchard, because they're monkeys. So even though they're pure devotees, they're still monkeys. You understand? So, you know, some three-year-old child, they're still a three-year-old child, even though they're absorbed in Krishna. They're not going to have, like, necessarily perfect etiquette or... You understand?
But they
may be very advanced mentally. Yeah, it's not what commonly happens, but it does sometimes happen. I mean, and I met one, as far as adults, I met one devotee in her 70s who had only been in the movement for a few years, so she only started to practice all the Bhajana Kriya. But I mean, she was born a Hindu, and she always had affection for Krishna, but she didn't have any regulated practice. She was a medical doctor. She had run a medical center. She was very politically connected in that local city. And she told me for her whole life, whenever she would walk anywhere, from the time she was a child, she would always just say, Krishna Rama, Krishna Rama, Krishna Rama. Everywhere she walked, all the time. She said, I was always dedicating everything to Krishna. But she wasn't absorbed in any. She didn't have any sadhana. She didn't have a guru. She didn't have any particular sadhana. I mean, once she took up Krishna consciousness, she became a highly advanced devotee very, very quickly. Like within about 2 years, she became a very advanced devotee. Although I don't think the other devotees there recognized that fact. Because they thought, oh, she's been a devotee just a couple years. So although she was displaying the symptoms of advancement, people weren't aware of it. But yeah, that's an example. She was mentally very absorbed in Krishna. But she wasn't engaged in the process. So that would be another example for an adult. That's an excellent question. Sorry, with Jyotinatra, the class starts really late. So we end up going really late unless I have just like a 10-minute class. Anybody else have a question? Comment? Yes?
When we have some Krishna, is it correct to share that with the people around, or we should
we share our absorption with Krishna with the people around? Machchitam mankata pranam bodhyantas prasparam kathayantas chamamyucham chushyanti chanamanticham. Yes. Now, some absorption with Krishna, you have to be careful that you share appropriately. Like we're not supposed to preach the glories of the holy name to faithless people who don't want to hear it. So one has to judge what aspects of your absorption in Krishna you can share with what person at what time. You know, some of your absorption in Krishna may be very private. You can only share with a few intimate friends. Some you can share with the world. That depends. But one of my favorite devotees, whenever I happen to see this devotee in my travels around the world, he'll say, oh, Armila, have you heard the news? The first few times he did that, I'm like, oh my God, someone's going to tell me some sort of gossip. You know, and I said, well, what news? He said, Mahaprabhu just got back from his South Indian tour and all the devotees have gone to greet him. And I'm like, okay, that's good. Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai.